Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Ted Santos, and I'm your host of The Creative Alchemist. And we come to you every Thursday live. And we are here. I'm here as your co-host. We are here to talk about business. We are a podcast that is set up to provide market research, intelligence, business analysis. We have done shows on transferable skills, exploiting opportunities in a COVID-19 environment. And today, I can tell you, today is going to be a huge conversation because, in my words, I say we have a new year, and we have a guest who may have another way of putting new year. And before we introduce him, I'm always with my co-pilot, Lori, let them know you're here.
Hi, this is Lori Miller, interior designer and mental health therapist here, and excited to hear what Morris has to say, our guest for today, CPA and MBA, CFO, number of companies, and we'll let him finish off the introduction because there are a lot of other credentials and a lot of other information he has for us. Thank you, Morris, for coming, and it's great to speak to you again.
Thank you so much, Lori and Ted, and thank you for inviting me here. It's really an honor and pleasure to do this podcast. And as Lori said,
Morris, I'm sorry. I'm always rude like this. Before you do that, so I want to say, so you and I have known one another for well over 10 years. I don't know, it's probably getting closer to 20. And you and I have worked on a number of projects together. And, you know, you're here in New Jersey, and we've worked in projects even outside, you know, in other states.
Mm-hmm.
So we've done a lot of interesting, some really interesting things together. We've spent a lot of time getting to know one another. So, I'm particularly looking forward to this because I know you to be a really brilliant guy. You know, as Laura said, CFO, MBA, you're a professor, you're well-rounded, you've been a CFO in NASD companies, and, I've even brought you into some of my clients to work with them. So, I'm proud and honored to have you here, and proud to say that, I have some intimate knowledge of what you do. I've seen you work with my clients, so it's for this kind of conversation and the environment we are in. You're really a perfect person to have this conversation that we're about to have because, as I said, I said a new year, and you have another way of seeing that. And I think you're just ideal for this kind of conversation and where we are today. And what has to happen in a kind of background and the kinds of ways that you look at things. So why don't you tell people first, before we dive into the topic, tell them a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what do you do? And then Lori and I are going to do like we always do is interviews. So we'll interview you. We'll have some people call in.
Mm-hmm.
If someone wants to call in, the number is 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. And I promise you will want to engage Morris if you are a business owner, if you are an executive, if you're someone working in the business and you're concerned where your company's going to go and how it's going to survive in this market, Morris is a person you want to engage. So, Morris, I'm going to say they can put you on the spot and bring the toughest question to you. So I'm confident you are the guy to handle that. So,
well, thank you for the vote of confidence. thank you for the vote of confidence. Hopefully, I will be able to, now that you've built me up to such extent, I hope I can at least reach those expectations, which, as entrepreneurs know, a lot of what entrepreneurs have to do is manage expectations. So, boy, Ted, you blew it for me. What can I tell you? Okay. So as Ted and Laurie were saying, my name is Morris Boshin. I'm actually a non-practicing CPA, and I have an MBA, and I had the MBA even before it was in vogue. My company is Creative Business Planning Incorporated, which was established in 1990 as a business and strategic company, primarily for small to mid-sized businesses. I guess you could say I help business owners sleep better at night. We provide cash flow solutions for small to mid-sized companies. We assist clients primarily in terms of enabling them to achieve the cash flows that they need for either survival, for growth, or in the event of a downturn, or for stability. So we provide four core areas of services. Number one, we act as we provide business and strategic planning services. Number two, we provide rent to CFO type of services for small to mid-sized companies that need the financial acumen of a CFO but can't afford a CFO. Through our company Now Capital, we also act as a financial intermediary in order to raise funding. So in other words, and we're primarily asset based. So in other words, you need collateral in order for us to help raise capital for you. And the fourth area that we focus in on, and which is especially important in light of today's episode or podcast, is debt mediation, debt workout, turnaround. As you'll hear throughout this podcast, that as the economy is changing, menu of services that you as an entrepreneur that will have to provide will also change. We've also acted as former CFO for several companies, including an NASD broker dealer. And I don't know how sophisticated your audience is, but an NASD broker dealer is primarily a securities firm. We sold financial instruments. I was also their chief due diligence officer. I've restructured over $300 million worth of debt. I sit on the loan committee of one of my funding sources. I've lectured at the SBA, SBDC. I was a member of the SBDC over at Rutgers Newark. I've taught at NYU School of Continuing Professional Studies. I've taught at City University of New York, being the Baruch College, as well as CCNY, where I went. And the topics that I taught were primarily business and strategic planning, putting together a business plan, as well as sustainable business practices. I've been a member of several boards. I've had published. I've had about four dozen articles published, primarily relating to small business financing and cash flow management. I've acted as a thesis advisor at NYU, and I've also been quoted in the New York Times, Inc. magazine, and some other publications.
Good. Really good. Thank you for that. You're originally from Jersey. Is that where you were born and raised?
No, I was born and bred in Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn.
It took years to lose the Brooklyn accent, you should know. But I probably share some of the same attributes as many of your listeners do. My parents were immigrants. They came in with the shirt on their back and not much more. And looking at it from my parents' perspective, let's just skip my generation. You look to the next generation, and they went from the shirt on their back to four grandchildren. One attended Columbia University. One went to Wharton. One became a doctor, and one went to Stanford and Chicago, University of Chicago.
So we,
as many immigrants do, we put tremendous value on education, but equally, if not more important, I would say they tried to teach us, and we tried to teach the next generation in terms of knowing how to think, and being able to understand patterns, pattern recognitions, and starting to understand how to apply those same pattern recognitions in other circumstances.
So, and what you just said is perfect, Morris, because I haven't said, the topic, and that is pattern recognition is a big deal for our topic tonight. And we usually ask a question, and the question for our topic is, how do you plan your business for a post-pandemic environment, economy, and future? So that's a pretty big topic, right? So
there are companies that
will make it and some that won't. And there are some patterns that can be recognized that will make the difference between winners and losers. Sorry, what were you going to say?
Yeah, no question about that. The pattern recognition is, we've gone through this pattern before, but many of us just really don't understand that. So let's take a look at so far this young century. We have gone through, and I would say arguably, three black swan events during this particular century. 9/11, the Great Recession, and what we're currently going through. Okay,
just in case someone doesn't understand a black swan event, can you succinctly say what that is?
Yes, a black swan event is sort of like an extraordinary event that's more like a 100-year type of transaction. It's something that's totally, totally, totally outside of normal pattern recognitions, although in hindsight, one should have been able to see that something was coming.
Hmm.
And not always, because the gentleman, God, I forget his name, Nassim, I forget his last name. But
not Nassim Taleb.
Sorry, go ahead.
Nassim Taleb.
Okay, that's right. He used the black swan as an example. In Europe, they had a scientific fact that all swans were white. And when they first came to the Americas, at some point, mm-hmm. someone saw a black swan. So that was something mm-hmm. that could never have been predicted. And there
right.
was no pattern. They had all the proof that swans were this way. And I guess we had the proof that there's the flu and there are things that happen that no one expected something to come from China and cause such a chaotic turmoil for the economy and people's personal lives. So not always easy to recognize.
Yes, that's why in hindsight, sometimes you can sometimes recognize, or many times recognize that pattern, being whether it's in 9/11, if you looked at the noise that happened prior
right.
to.
Right, right.
And with the financial meltdown that we had in 2008, 2009, there were signs along the way, and arguably this situation, I don't know if you listen to TED talks or not. I don't mean Ted Santos talks, but TED talks, you know. And
that's what it is. It's a TED talk.
But Bill Gates, and it's almost 5 years to the date, had a phenomenal TED talk about the pandemic, the upcoming pandemic.
Right.
It wasn't a matter of if it was going to happen. It was a matter of when it was going to happen.
Mm.
And he detailed this. If your listeners want to listen to it, all you have to do is Google it, and I think it's less than 18 minutes. He describes in excruciating detail what the pandemic is going to be like, and to a point where conspiracy theorists were, I guess fringe ones were saying that Bill Gates was partially responsible for it.
Right.
Okay.
Right,
because if you understand the pattern, if you understand what to look for, it becomes a heck of a lot easier to identify certain things and prepare for certain things well in advance.
Right. And just as a side, I did hear Bill Gates do that speech. I also heard the former President Obama say something similar. I forget what year it was, but he also spoke about an upcoming pandemic. So There have been warnings, is what I'm getting at.
Exactly, and as a matter of fact, he set up, and President Obama continued it. He set up a pandemic task force or strike force, so that in
right.
the event that the pandemic were to occur, we would be prepared for that.
So Morris, let's talk about this in business. So, if you look at patterns of companies, what kinds of companies could benefit from this pandemic, right? Especially if we're looking at small and mid-sized. And then on the flip side, what companies could be hurt, however, could possibly transfer skills and be prepared. It's kind of too late to be prepared in advance, right, as we're saying. You know, they gave us hints, and you could have looked for certain things and been prepared. But now we are, you know, I don't know if we're in the middle of it or one quarter through, but we are in it right now. So what are the companies that can exploit this opportunity, and then the companies that could be hurt by it, except they could recover by transferring skills and doing something else, and maybe give some examples of both.
Okay, so if you take a look at healthcare, clearly that's going to be a winner. And during this pandemic, what had actually happened is that you had certain doctors with certain medical skills, let's say like plastic surgeons and other type of doctors that, you know, because they were trained as MDs, they had the basic training, and in essence, during the pandemic, they were working. You know, they were working the ER because elective surgeries were no longer permitted. They had, you know, in order to earn a living, what they did is they transferred this. They just repositioned themselves from being a plastic surgeon into being an ER type of doctor.
Okay.
Okay, because it's the same training. It's just that the subsequent training is a lot different. Same thing, you know, other winners are going to be big data, telemedicine, communications, collaboration type of software, video conferencing, etc., apps like Zoom, BlueJeans, MS Team, Slack, entertainment, certain kinds of entertainment, primarily web content, streaming type of content. Online retailers like Amazon. Clearly, the funeral industry is a winner.
Right.
And as I said, technology, information technology, social networking, picture sharing, et cetera, they are all tracking software. They're going to be big winners. And if you don't mind, just by way of example, if we look at, let's call it the financial meltdown of 2008-2009, let's take a look at some of the startup companies that presumably all of your listeners have heard, all of them, if not most of them. Airbnb, although at that time it was called Air Bed and Breakfast, Uber, Credit Karma, WhatsApp, Groupon, Instagram, Pinterest, Slack, Cloudera, and probably most of you don't know, may not be aware of this, but Google Ventures, which is Google's venture capital fund, was also created during that because it was being opportunistic. They've seen a lot of so this is a great time if you understand what to look for, as long as your three most important, you know, the basic rule of business is find the need and fill it. That is
right.
Sort of like the gospel. Okay, and the second, to me, almost like the second rule of business, just like in real estate, the three most important words in real estate is location, location, location. Well, the three most important words in business should be the client, 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 client.
Right.
With a very close second, employees, employees, employees. You need to know your customer, understand your customer, understand the day in the life of the customer, understand the voids, understand what he's going through, and understand how to make his or her life easier, so that your particular business idea can gain traction within them. And once you have your proof of concept, once you start gaining traction, the funding part isn't really as difficult as it might sound, as long as you have a decent network of people.
Okay. Yeah.
And for those of you who are younger, if you're reasonably close, if you're in college or a relatively recent graduate, well, if you go back to some of those business professors of yours, and assuming you've made a very, very favorable impression on them, they may help you in terms of giving you credibility as well as attracting capital for you in order to be able to grow your company.
Okay. So what about the industries that could get hurt and there could be patterns that could help them?
Okay. Well, you have clearly you have the travel business. You have the airline, buses, trains, hotels, other hospitalities. You have movie theaters. You have sporting events, whether it's professional, college, Olympic, etc. You have your let's call it non-online retail. You have your gas stations. You have your food services. Even your farms and ranches have been disrupted tremendously as a result. You have probably much less known to people are, let's call it, your trucking and delivering services, because so much of their business related to let's call it the schools, the colleges, to restaurants. The trucking industry is hurting so much that
wow.
Yes, that's why I'm saying that's probably lesser known. The advertising business. I don't know about you, but I've been getting a lot less junk mail in the last 8 weeks. So, and for those of you who are in that business, I apologize for calling it junk mail, but that's what it is to me. Automotive sales, auto repairs, parts, event planning, real estate, whether or not you're dealing with residential, whether you're dealing with office space, you know, people are going to re-examine their commitment to office space as a result of all of this remote, as a result of the telecommuting. Even attorneys will have to reposition themselves temporarily during this downturn. Divorce attorneys are probably hurting because very few people can afford to get a divorce now. As the economy picks up, they will have a resurge in business. Bankruptcy attorneys will have a tremendous resurge in business. Again, going back to transferability of skills, what will ultimately happen is if you are involved with, let's call it real estate, and you're a transactional attorney, Well, the your transactions are going to change from, let's call it, a willing buyer to a willing seller, to that of distress sales. Similarly, with energy, attorneys, you have people that specialize in energy, be it oil and gas, be it other types. What ultimately will happen is, as many of those assets, the value, the price of oil has plummeted, because obviously there's a considerably lower demand for it. Ultimately, what happens is that the value of the assets may not be able to pay the debt on it, so there's going to be a lot more distress sales. So if you're involved with mergers and acquisitions, your M&A people will become more distress M&A people. Your brokers that were looking at willing buyers, willing sellers, will have to reposition themselves for distress. And again, this is really no different than some of the patterns that occurred, whether it's in the 1970s or 1980s, certainly during the Great Recession. We've had recessions before. These patterns existed. And many of them will continue. The big difference is the overlay with the pandemic. But we've had pandemics in the world before, whether it was SARS, whether it was MERSA, etc. It may not have hit the United States, but there were countries that learned from it and executed accordingly as a result, and their economies are expected to take a much, 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 much smaller hit than the U.S. economy. So, and just by way of example, if you take a look at South Korea, the executives are basically South Korea, Taiwan, Malta, I think Switzerland was also part of the group. They're expecting to take approximately between a 1 to 2% decrease in their gross domestic product, their GDP, because of the pandemic, whereas U.S. executives are projecting somewhere between 8 and 13% reduction in their gross domestic product it's going to take a longer time to recover as a result. By the same token, So solutions to in those countries are obviously going to be significantly different than solutions in this country. And just so your listeners understand the magnitude of this, the trajectory of how it is, as far as whether or not there's going to be a second wave, a third wave, etc., can equate. As well as how quickly the economy, you're talking about potentially over $5 trillion with a T dollars worth of GDP over the next 3 years.
Wow.
Okay, these are humongous numbers, which is part of the reason why politicians want the economy's open, because they're not going to get reelected if your economy decreases by $2 trillion. That's a humongous problem. When your unemployment rate when your official unemployment rate is somewhere around, let's call it 14.7, 14.8, 14.9, but probably closer to 20 to 23%. That creates a big problem.
Do you know what the unemployment rate was during the height of the Depression?
What I've read was this is the last time we've seen unemployment rates like this was around the time of the Great Depression. I don't know what part of the Great Depression, whether or not it was the beginning, the middle, the end, but as well as
1935, somewhere around.
Right.
It wasn't at the beginning. It was later.
As well as the other thing about it is the way we calculate the unemployment is a lot different today than it was back then. Again, just by way of context, if you were out of work for, let's call it for a certain amount of time, I think it's, I forget whether it's 6 months, 9 months, a year, or something like that, you were considered to be out of the workforce, and as such, you were not, you're not counted as unemployed. Whereas in the 1930s, you were counted as unemployed.
Okay,
and these numbers have been, for lack of a better term, have been modified, juggled, whatever, by both Democrats and Republicans, but it was primarily for political gain.
Okay.
But we're at a point where we need real numbers in order to come up with real solutions. You know, when I teach entrepreneurship, I ask my students the following question: Would you rather run your business based upon opinion or based upon fact?
Right.
Okay, and that's why, if you noticed in my introduction, one of the things I mentioned was cash flow, because you know your profit and loss is a matter of opinion. When you recognize money, when you recognize income, is opinion. Whether you're writing bad debts off, it's an opinion. How much depreciation you're taking, it's an opinion, because there's different ways of doing it. Whereas how much cash came into your bank is not an opinion. It's fact.
Right, exactly.
Okay, and that's part of the reason why, in my humble opinion, when you know, entrepreneurs, especially in these times, have to manage their business with cash flow, especially if liquidity or solvency is an issue. So you know, we're recommending to clients that if they're small businesses, that they put together projections on a week, you know, it shows cash flow on a weekly basis, because they may not, you know, in a month, you know, a 30-day time frame may hide a lot of stuff, whereas a 6-day, 7-day basis, you can't hide as much.
Right.
So the projections are going to have much greater value that way.
So, Morris, let me ask you, in your introduction, you were talking about the four core areas, right? And you're kind of alluding to that now. And those four areas were, just for everyone else, business and strategic planning, acting as a rent a CFO, you do finance, and then you do workouts.
Correct.
So do you tell your clients the importance of focus, right? And
we create
areas. Shouldn't you be focused in one area yourself?
You're right. However, if you think about all of those four core areas and you take a look at the role of a CFO, I've outlined it. A CFO does provide business and strategic planning services. They are the CFO, so they're not a rent the CFO. They will in essence position and package their company for whatever stage the company is in, whether it's for declining sales, whether it's stability, whether it's for growth. And if things don't work out, again, what happens is they're responsible for trying to put together some sort of package if they have the skill sets to do so. But when you put together a workout package, you cannot just put together a workout package without, in essence, putting together what amounts to some sort of business and strategic plan. These things are, yes, there's going to be a lot of financial projections in there, which the CFO does do. That is the role of a CFO, or part of the role of a CFO. But ultimately what it is that these are all complementary services as opposed to conflicting. And to only have one is actually selling yourself short, because if I only try to talk about the three services, well, in today's environment, I could be in trouble, because for the next 2, 3, 4 months, I would anticipate getting – a significant amount of additional revenue coming in from the work out to restructure type of thing. And if I don't mention that, I'm not even at the table.
Right.
You know, people won't even people won't even consider me.
And so, how important is that now, like strategic planning? So at the beginning of the show, I said, you know, kind of like this is a reset, right? We've got a new year, and lots of people do their strategic planning in the fourth quarter of the year. So people would have done that by November and December of last year.
Mm-hmm.
They planned for 2020, and here we are, like you said, a black swan, and it's the third one in the century. So we've got a new year, and you do strategic planning. So how do you do that in this kind of environment now that we're almost halfway through, you know, we're a quarter through the year?
Yes, and we still don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. So, at least in my opinion. So, I guess the way I would look at it is just like in health. Like in the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s, etc. If you had a heart attack, if you had cancer, if you had certain illnesses, you know, there was a very, very high probability that you'd never return to yourself.
Mm,
okay.
Right.
In a heart attack, there was a greater chance it would be fatal. With cancer, there's a greater chance it would be fatal. But we've invested billions upon billions upon billions of dollars, whether it's, you know, in R&D and pharmaceutical and government. You know, we've invested billions of billions of dollars in order to be able to make sure that we've shifted the paradigm. And that these things are no longer as fatal as they once were. Well, BC, before Corona, what happened is that, you know, if you take a look at your financial projections through, you know, for this year as of December 31st, 2019, you know, your assumptions were X. Now what happens is come today or come whatever, you know, March something or other, all of a sudden you recognize that you had this, let's call it this health emergency, and everything about you, whatever it was that you could do before, you no longer had the physical capability or financial capability, et cetera. So ultimately what happens is that when you look at your financial projections, you now have to say, gee, whatever I thought was is no longer. It's like you were Rip Van Winkle. You slept through what amounted to maybe a decade, because if you think about it, the rapid adoption of technology, going from working at your desk in an office to literally telecommuting, took days instead of 10 years.
Right.
So things like, let's call it office, you know, the office real estate market doesn't really have an opportunity to change that quickly. Whereas if it transitioned over 10 years, it wouldn't be it probably won't be having the problems it's going to have now. So, as such, you know, whatever assumptions went out the door. We're not even talking statistically. There's something known as standard deviations. So, black swan event, maybe two or three or four standard deviations, three or four standard deviations. So let's say one standard deviation, you know, that's not normal during the course of a year. Two, maybe like a five or 10 year event. You know, a three standard deviation may be like a 50 year type of event. A four standard deviation, like the black swan, is probably closer to a 100 year event. So what's now happening is we have these four, you know, three, four standard deviation type of variances. This is, you know, most of us, unless if we recognize certain patterns, have never seen anything like that.
Right.
But again, because of pattern recognition, we can see what happened. Let's say like the airline industry. You had 9/11. You had the airline industry. How long do you think it took for the airline industry to recover from 9/11? It didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen, when the government basically said it's okay to fly. It took approximately 2 years to go back to its normal traffic.
That's a long time.
Yes.
Especially you're talking at companies that really do have some level of survival on a quarter to quarter in 24 months. That's a lot of quarters.
Well, yes. Well, I'll give you a different. Let's not sugarcoat it. What happens is that airlines, in particular, have a very, very, very high fixed cost. In other words, they have very, very high obligation they have to pay month after month after month after month, regardless as far as whether or not they have sales of $1 billion or $1. Okay, so they have a very extremely high fixed cost ratio. A fixed cost. So as such, it becomes extremely difficult for many of them to survive, which is part of the reason why you did have a consolidation within the field.
Right.
Okay, and again, this is not unusual. This is actually, very, very usual. And you do have companies now that are well capitalized, that are looking for let's call it these opportunities. Back in the good old days, we used to call it like vulture funds. They're looking for the carcass, for what's going to be the carcass, and they're looking to basically pick the bones dry.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay, so you don't want to be in that category. You want to be in the category where that if you have a strong enough network and you have the skill sets, or you and your friends have business associates, etc., have the skill sets, you want to start that vulture fund. Whether it's in product A, product B, product C, that's less important. But you want to be in a situation where ultimately you have the resources and you've taken inventory of your resources and you put yourself on a path whereby you understand what the patterns are going to be and put yourself in a position where you can capitalize on those patterns. Our former labor secretary Robert Reich was saying that during the pandemic, the 1 or 2 percenters basically made about $280 billion so far.
Wow.
Okay, and I, depending upon your bent, you may or may not necessarily trust his numbers or whatever. If they're off, I from my perspective, I don't think they're far off. But and he's certainly seeing a lot of information that I'm not seeing. But I think that there are opportunities out there, and just like at one point in time, Airbnb was a relatively small company, as well as Instagram, Slack, etc. There are a tremendous number of opportunities, and I don't know if you're familiar with this name, but there was Bill Gross, who's a venture capitalist. What he always says is, it's the most important thing in terms of business success. Most people think it's the team, which is extremely important. Mm-hmm. The idea, which is less important, the most important thing is the timing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Now, since he's worth probably about, I think the last time I looked, he was worth about $7 billion. He won that debate with me.
Lori, do you have – so Morris and I can talk forever. Do you have a question?
Guys, this is your specialty.
okay.
You're talking about a lot, and clearly there are companies that are sharks, right? And we know a few of them that really prey on – I like to say prey on the weak. You call them vultures. You know, and there are companies that did have, I guess, significant loans with these, you know, company, you know, these financial mm-hmm. companies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now here they are and they're kind of struggling, right? Because the business is limited for certain businesses. You know, how would you advise them to hire a CFO? Would you, if they're not working with them, to restructure the debt? Or, like, how would you guide someone, or what could they do to kind of put themselves in a better situation?
Okay, well, first of all, if they don't have the help themselves, I would certainly say tell them to run and get the help. Because the first thing that you need to do is you need to aim for survivability and resilience. Forget economic efficiencies. That went out the door. It's survivability mm-hmm. and resilience. Point number okay. two is quantify a plan for a variety of threats. Okay, don't just talk about it, but you're going to have to figure out, you're going to have to put pencil to paper and actually start to create financial projections based upon mm-hmm. your quantification. Number three is you're going to have to eventually build organizational immune system rather than maximizing short-term profits. And the fourth thing is you're going to have to figure out how to integrate government policies rather than just focusing in on business economics. And to that, what I need to tell your listeners is you need to get involved. Okay, you cannot be passive. You must be proactive. You know, right. there's an expression that we use. If you're not at the table, you're on the menu. So in other words, I'm sorry if it sounds like a comedy, but in other words, what happens is, that if you're not involved, if you don't speak to your legislatures periodically, you know, if you're not involved, ultimately what will happen, and your congresspeople don't know what, you know, where you are, what you're doing, etc., and what your needs are. Well, when they create budgets, when they carve certain things up, if you're not at the table, you're going to be carved out of anything, of any policies that's going to be created.
Uh-huh.
So it becomes extremely mm-hmm. important to be proactive and to actually be at the, you know, be at that table, be in their face. Because without that, look, another way of looking at this is if you take a look at, let's call it a small bank versus, let's call it a money center bank. You know,
right.
call it Chase, call it J.P. Morgan, etc. And I know you recently had a guest on talking about the PPP.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, the money center banks were instrumental in terms of creating certain language towards the PPP.
Right.
Okay, so by the time certain things came about, they had already started to develop their, let's call it their infrastructure, their computer systems, so that they could right. process these things. So literally, you know, I forget the date that it was open, but give or take 3 or 4 days later or 5 days later or whatever, they'd already burned through the 350, whatever, the $300, $400 million.
Right.
Okay.
That's exactly.
They were at the table. Your small community bank, who may be an SBA type of lender, wasn't at the table. So ultimately, they had to play catch up, and in essence, most of them couldn't really produce many PPP loans.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Okay, so. Wow. I don't mean to hit like a panic button, but if mm-hmm. you're not there, you're in trouble. And I Ted, you and I spoke about this when I was a CFO for the NASD broker dealer. We were going through a tax reform, and we were getting daily updates from the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. And ultimately, what that enabled us to do was it enabled us to reposition the firm from selling one type of security to a totally different kind of security, because we had what amounted to is 6 to 9 months advance on let's call it on our competition.
Okay.
So, you know, had we not have been proactive, we would have gone out of business, because as most of our competitors who were doing the same thing we were doing. Because Congress basically was shutting down, even though it was legal, et cetera, they were eliminating a certain tax benefit that we were affording our clients. So we had a position, we were able to reposition the business to be able to survive through the Tax Reform Act of 86 and to continue moving forward.
Interesting. Right.
You need to be at the table.
Absolutely.
So, what you really have to do is when you start the process, you really have to go through what amounts to is a scenario analysis. It's not just your best case, your worst case, you're somewhere in the middle. You're also going to have to take a look at trajectories. And these are going to be a lot more comprehensive than your traditional financial projections, because the range is going to be so much different than what we are normally used to. But
absolutely.
Part of what this...
And you're, go ahead.
Go
part
ahead.
Of what...
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you've been around a block a few times, so you have a very savvy and sophisticated way of dealing with business and finance and legislators, and I just want to make sure Lori's question was answered first. Lori, did he answer your question? Do you?
Well, I got the run. but I guess, you know, where would people run to? I mean, you said legislators, but I'm not sure how they would exactly help in, you know, the average small business owner. Like,
you'd be surprised, because, you know, like during the Obama administration, my friends and I, you had what was called the cap and trade bill, which didn't pass.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, what happened is we wound up going down to Congress to meet my business associates, congressman.
Mm-hmm.
My congressman wasn't involved, and he usually there's two or three names on the bill. He would have been the fourth name on the bill, and ultimately what happens is we were there, we were proposing what amounted to is some minor changes to the cap and trade bill, mm-hmm. ones that would enable small business to be able to really create a lot of new businesses by reducing. By reducing pollution and other things like that, as well mm-hmm. as putting up solar panels, et cetera, et cetera. So, because we were, there were three of us that went down there. If there would have been 300 or 3,000 mm-hmm. of us, we would have gotten a totally different reaction. Okay, but I can tell you that mm-hmm. when we got down there. The bill was, I think, somewhere around 800 pages or something like that. By the time it failed, it was over 1,700 pages. Okay, and
wow.
most of that came from people who were at the table.
So,
right.
in this kind of pandemic, in this environment, are you suggesting that companies? So you talked about. Focus on survivability, right? So
right.
It's not
so much
looking at 24 months, you know, or five-year plan, you know, how do you survive? And part of the way you may need to survive is, as you were talking about the PPP, the small banks were not at the table, so they may have gotten crumbs or very little of that money,
uh-huh.
right?
Yes, yes.
So, if you are a small business, and I know they're talking about doing another $3 trillion stimulus package, you might want
oh, wow.
to have your voice heard by your legislators.
Well, I certainly would, but I'm more of a firm believer of being proactive on my own. And what I would do is I would take certain steps internally while spending a little time advocating, whether it's calling the legislators' offices, etc., or visiting. But essentially, what I would be doing is you're selling a wide array of products. So you need to cut your losses on stuff that's not selling. You need to understand your mix. What's selling? What's not? What's profitable? What's not profitable? You need to understand that your mix, in all likelihood, changed as a result of this pandemic. So for argument's sake, if you were selling donuts, if you were selling in an office environment, with people going to work, waiting for a bus, etc., you'd be selling donuts and coffee or other beverages, right? Whereas today, okay, people might walk into their local donut shop, but if they're taking it home, they may not necessarily be ordering coffee or something like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the marketing mix changes. You're going to have to introduce new products that will excite people, but also have a relatively low entry cost, so that you can experiment, you can introduce, you can test, and if things work, you can ramp it up. But you're looking for how it is that I can get cash flow ASAP, because without that cash flow, you're out of business.
Right.
Okay. So this may be a wise time to experiment, and Morris, we're winding down on the closing. You may have actually answered the question I would have asked. Your final words of wisdom, and I think you're kind of doing that now.
Okay. Well, my final words of wisdom is probably opportunity really depends on a lot of different factors. We already discussed the first rule of business is find a need and fill it. Second thing is find something that you're passionate about and figure out how to do a business around it, for those of you who really haven't started a business yet. And the third thing is take an inventory of your skill sets. Once you figure it out what it is you want to do, take an inventory of your skill sets, see what it is that you have, and see if it's aligned to what it is you want to do. And if you don't have those, you have to figure out a way to augment things so that you can create or continue in the business that you want to be in. So that's really my pearls of wisdom. And I guess as an adjunct to that, you need to keep, if you're in business, you may have to take a pay cut before you give your employees a pay cut, because your employees literally and figuratively go home every single night. If you want them to come back, you want to make sure that they're treated well. So you need to treat your employees properly, because if you don't and protect them, et cetera, et cetera. So when we start to go back to work, you need to make sure that they're protected, that they have the equipment that they need, that there's distancing, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Right. Their safety. Right. Because you want them to come back. Right. You don't want them in the hospital. So
exactly. Exactly.
Great advice, Morris. Lori, any final words in the last 2 minutes?
No. It was definitely, this is a learning piece. Thank you, Morris, very much.
My pleasure, and thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely a lot of information. So, I mean, if you want to give your contact information, or if anybody wants to rent a CFO, maybe you want to tell them how to do that.
Sure. The name is Morris Bocian, B-O-C-I-A-N. You can email me at M as in Mary, B as in Blue, at creativebusinessplanning.com, all one word. And in your reference, because I get a lot of spam, please try to reference this podcast or podcast.
The Creative Alchemist. Put in the subject line, heard you on Creative Alchemist. That would be...
That would be wonderful. Thank you. And okay. for those of you who want to call me, my number is 973-736-2535. Please leave a message, because we do monitor calls and we get a lot of spam calls. So I will return the call as soon as I possibly can.
Perfect. Hey, Morris, as I thought, you're brilliant. Thank you. Great job.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. A complex and a really big subject. And thank you for everyone who listened. And I hope you got a lot out of it. And we'll see everyone next week. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Have a great evening. Bye.
You too. Bye.
Bye.